Good afternoon. This is Richmond Independent Radio News for Friday, July 8th, 2005. I'm Lauren Ball. This week, we take a look at the effectiveness of joining the Richmond Police Department and the community to combat crime.
With the citizens' help, we are successful in reducing violent crime in the city of Richmond.
We will also take a look at the mission of Mountain Justice Summer, which staged a rally this afternoon in Monroe Park to coincide with the G8 summit in Scotland.
Communities in Appalachia and the survival of the ecosystems that we depend on for survival is actually more important than Massey's bottom line.
And we'll remember Thomas Cannon, an exceptional member of the Richmond community who passed away on July 2nd. We'll give you those stories and more after these headlines.
For WRAR News, I'm Matt Beckwith. At noon today, Monroe Park was the site of a rally staged to coincide with the G8 summit currently taking place in Scotland. The rally, which was organized locally by the Mountain Justice Summer Network, was part of the G8 International Day of Action on the Root Causes of Climate Change. The local focus for the rally and protest was the issue of mountaintop removal, which is a mining practice used by coal companies such as Richmond-based Massey Energy. Mountaintop removal has been heavily protested by both environmental organizations and the community it affects as being detrimental to the environment and hazardous to the health of citizens who live in the coalfield areas.
But we've seen our creeks run black too often and our rivers full of sediment. It's not safe to swim or drink the tap water. We can no longer eat fish in our creeks. We've seen our homes sink and our foundations crack and boulders fly through our roofs. Our homes are no longer havens. We've seen overloaded coal trucks speed through our twisting mountain passages. Our roads are dangerous. We've seen coal dust accumulate overnight and our children suffer from asthma too often.
Members of the communities affected by mountaintop removal spoke about their experiences and about their demands for Massey and the other coal companies.
That's all we want in our coal fields is peace. We want them to stop terrorizing and destroying us.
The rally continued with a march down Franklin Street to the Massey Energy headquarters in downtown Richmond.
All right, y'all, I guess we're going to get ready to march. There's a ton of banners and signs to pick up over here, and then we'll get going. Thanks for sticking around.
Stay tuned to WRAR News for an interview with Abigail Singer of Mountain Justice Summer later in the program. On Tuesday, 3rd District City Councilman Christopher Hilbert expressed his desire to see the City of Richmond take further action to prevent violent crimes in the Richmond community. Driven by the increase in homicide and assaults in recent weeks, he has asked that the community, the Richmond Police Department, and the Mayor's Office step up collaborative efforts to deal with this issue. Richmond has already seen 47 murders since January 1, 2005. Over the July 4th holiday weekend, there were 3 homicides in the city. The week previous saw the murders of 2 brothers, Antonio and Sean Baskerville, residents in Councilman Hilbert's district. He attended the Baskervilles' funeral service on Thursday afternoon. Hilbert has said, quote, "Now is the time to become engaged. We are losing too many of our young African-American families to gun violence," end quote. Hilbert, who is chair of City Council's Public Safety Committee, plans to meet with Mayor Wilder and Richmond Police Chief Rodney Monroe regarding this issue. New York-based photographer John Movius brings a collaborative installation to the 1708 Gallery in downtown Richmond this weekend. 2 years ago, Movius stumbled upon snapshots taken by soldiers who served in the first Gulf War. The images were taken with point-and-shoot cameras despite camera restrictions in war zones and posted to soldiers' websites upon their return to the States. Movius decided to seek out more of these pictures, taken in and around 1991 in the deserts of Iraq and Kuwait. In doing so, he became acquainted with the soldiers and their stories and realized the unique perspective represented in the shots.
They're not the pictures you see on New York Times or on CNN of the kind of war photographer moment of being in the street and having this pivotal moment of war where someone is dying or some explosion is happening, and it's an award-winning documentary photograph that's supposed to embody everything that war means. This was a totally different perspective of war, and that's what drew me to it.
Since February 2003, Movius has been moving around the country, meeting veterans of the Gulf War and collecting their 4x6 photos to add to a project he calls Sight Range. Sight Range will open in Richmond this weekend, but it is a work in progress. Mobius has asked that all Richmond area veterans who have photos taken during the first Gulf War bring them to the opening on Friday, July 8th, 2005 at the 1708 Gallery to become a part of the exhibition. The Nissan Xterra Games are known for its events pitting athlete against nature. There are competitions in mountain biking, kayaking, and rock climbing, along with a grueling 24-mile triathlon. You might think these games would be held in a remote national park, but for the seventh year in a row, the Xterra East Coast Championships were held right here in downtown Richmond. WRIR's Dustin Richardson has more.
The Hawaii-based Nissan Xterra Games attracts some of the world's most accomplished athletes to its events. Thousands of competitors representing over a dozen countries train for months to tackle the challenges offered by the terrain that we see every day. Xterra officials say that of the four cities where regional championships are held, Richmond is by far the favorite of both athletes and organizers alike. It's not just that we have a river containing whitewater rapids and miles of trails for running and biking that attracts the annual events. It's that we have them all in one place, right in the middle of the city. Libby Hera, a 56-year-old Florida native who competed in the triathlon, says she looks forward to the Richmond Championships every year.
So this is my third visit to Richmond, and what a tremendous place. You just this park downtown here is just unbelievable, the variety that you can offer here. The trail is awesome.
Weekend activities on Browns Island also included food, live bands, workshops, and a fireworks display. For WRIR News, I'm Dustin Richardson, downtown.
This is WRIR News.
For WRIR News, I'm Lauren Ball. Since the induction of Richmond Police Chief Rodney Monroe, there has been a greater emphasis on joining law enforcement with community intervention in solving open crime cases and offsetting potential violence. WRIR's Vicki Ward recently spoke to Detective Ron Brown about the current recruitment efforts towards community intervention with the Richmond Police Department.
In 1998, Ron Brown, then an officer enrolled in the COPS program, Community-Oriented Policing Services, had apprehended a juvenile at Armstrong High School who had shot a teacher and wounded a guidance counselor. Shortly thereafter, Brown was commended by President Clinton in a White House ceremony for his effective community presence.
Of course, we do all that we can, and with the citizens' help, we are successful in reducing violent crime in the city of Richmond. We still need the citizens' help in reducing it even further, and we're hopeful that individuals that have information about particular crimes, that they notify the police department. They can contact our detective division at 646-6741, or if they want to remain anonymous, they can use the Crime Stopper line, which is 780-1000. But we're always partnering with the communities in reducing violent crime in the city of Richmond.
How do we recognize the officials that are involved in the community programs that Chief Monroe wants to enforce? What kind of plans do you have in place toward that effort?
Well, Chief Monroe has divided the city into 12 sectors. Police officers will be divided throughout those 12 sectors, as well as a member of the Commonwealth Attorney's Office. This will give a greater presence of police officers. This will reduce response time of officers responding to particular calls. This partnership with the community, with the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, and the Richmond Police Department will be a great merge in reducing crime in the city of Richmond.
The concept of community policing has since gained notice and advocacy by scholars and government officials, including those in Richmond. I sat with Dr. Alita L. Meyer, Associate Director of Crime Prevention and Positive Youth Development in the Psychology Department at Virginia Commonwealth University. The community support program emphasizes encouraging constructive juvenile development over punishment for youth at risk.
We've been working with the Richmond Public Schools for 13 years and surveying students at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year and having teachers complete kind of observation forms on the students. We get permission from the kids and their parents to do all of this. And then in the middle, we implement the program with half of the students or half of the schools, depending on the study. and then look at their behavior a year later and see if there are fewer fights, fewer suspensions in school and things like that. And we've found that our program is effective, and it is one of the model programs that the Department of Education and the SAMHSA and Surgeon General have all identified as a model program. It's called Responding in Peaceful and Positive Ways.
Okay. You usually, therefore, receive a child when he's at that fight stage level.
It's actually a universal program, which means that the entire school gets it. So instead of pulling out kids that are a problem, which actually is a problem, there's been quite a bit of research that shows that if you pull at-risk kids out and put them in a small group, they become better friends and more deviant. But if you take the whole sixth grade and view that as everybody needs to learn skills for problem solving, everybody needs to learn skills for conflict management, and this is how we're going to do it, that seems to kind of set the tone for everybody. And so those kids that are at higher risk might learn things that they hadn't really been aware of before, or try things maybe that they hadn't thought were cool to try before.
Do you think for children that go on to more violent crime, they're lacking that kind of intervention and guidance?
Well, that kind of intervention would only be 25 hours in a kid's life. And for me to be a good conflict manager and to solve my problems, I would need to have been taught quite a bit, and to have it at my home, in my neighborhood, in my school, and in all my classes all day long. And so kids who don't have that kind of saturation and the same kind of norms across settings can have a lot of difficulty, because it may be that that's the only place that they've really been exposed. And another source of exposure to negative skills would be media, and people joke that that's like the third parent or the first parent. And in the media, there's always a good guy and a bad guy, and when the good guy uses violence, it's okay, and you never see any consequences. So for all of us to be good at resolving conflicts, we need to think about it all the time. You have to remind yourself to be a good listener. You know, it's not like a skill that ever you have down pat. You always have to work on your conflict resolution skills.
What if children who do live in high crime areas and do see the consequences of bad behavior and violence, why is it often not making an impact?
They might view the consequences differently than we do. They may see a lot of other people getting away with it that don't make it into the news. It may be that they don't perceive that there's a whole lot of other options for them, that the person that they look up to in the neighborhood might be someone who's dealing drugs, or they might actually be helping support some of the people in the neighborhood. And they may not have any sense that there's any other options. If they don't see other adults in their environment who are doing different kinds of things, then they may not really even know that there are options. We recently met with the assistant chief, and they're going to be taking a problem-solving approach to community violence, which is very exciting because that's the approach that we take with responding in peaceful and positive ways. So to have that match between the Richmond Police Department and what they're trying to do in the schools, I think will be very powerful. Kind of an approach of arresting people and putting them away is kind of a disconnect between that, lock them up, and problem-solving. And so that, I think that'll be good. So we've talked with them about, once they make their changes, how we might help with training. We've done a number of things in the past with the Richmond Police Department. 2 years ago, we put on a conference called Connecting the Dots, which was a conference for youth, faith-based youth leaders on the topic of mentoring. And so we co-sponsored that with them. We've done a number of data sharing types of things. We're working with neighborhood teams on looking at the data in their neighborhood to maybe persuade the ABC board on whether or not to reinstate licenses for single units of beer, because the pattern is clear that around areas where those stores are, that the crime is higher in those areas. And we've had students do internships with the Richmond Police Department, and it's one of our really strong partnerships. And I think with the new leadership, there's going to be even more opportunities.
We will occasionally follow up on the progress of community intervention programs as they are implemented by the Richmond Police Department, the Richmond School Board, and by the incoming Commonwealth Attorney's Administration. For WRIR News, this is Vicki Ward.
Women and children are the fastest growing segment of the homeless population. The Daily Planet has served Richmond's homeless population for nearly 35 years, providing valuable medical, dental, vision, and mental health services. They also do case management and job training. More than 35% of the healthcare clinic's clients are now female. Want to know more about the Daily Planet and homelessness in Richmond and the United States? More information is available at www.dailyplanetva.org.
Ever notice how other radio stations think about music and news?
Sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear.
Ever wonder where their programming decisions are made?
We are controlling transmission.
At WRIR, we think the community should be a big part of the station. To find out how you can participate in creating the future of Richmond Independent Radio, log on to WRIR.org.
You are about to participate in a great adventure.
And if you like what you hear on the air, tell a friend.
For WRIR News, I'm Lauren Ball. Earlier today, Monroe Park was the site of a rally for the G8 International Day of Action on the root causes of climate change. The East Coast Convergence Against Massey Energy was the local focus of efforts by the Mountain Justice Summer Network, intended to coincide with the G8 Summit currently taking place in Scotland. The G8 Summit hosts the leaders of the world's 8 most powerful nations who are in attendance to address the most pressing issues facing the world at present. According to the organizers of Mountain Justice Summer, mountaintop removal and the root causes of climate change are among the most pressing and most neglected issues before the world's leaders. Mountain Justice Summer has committed to bringing national attention to environmental abuses affecting Appalachia, which they contend are perpetrated mainly by coal companies in the region. Despite extensive backlash from communities dealing with the detrimental effects of living in coal fields, large coal companies continue to utilize mountaintop removal and other environmentally unsound mining practices in the region. The target of today's protest was the Massey Energy Corporation, which is headquartered in Richmond. I spoke with Abigail Singer, an organizer of Mountain Justice Summer, about the goals of the organization, plans for the rally, and why it is important that the world's most powerful leaders turn their attention to abuses of the environment and human life carried out in the name of big business. Can you tell me a little bit about Mountain Justice Summer?
Mountain Justice Summer is a network and a campaign organized across Appalachia in several different states, fighting mountaintop removal, coal mining. We're made up of coal fields residents, environmentalists, students, parents, grandparents, basically just concerned citizens who are dealing with the effects of mountaintop removal.
What are the goals of Mountain Justice Summer?
Well, Mountain Justice Summer is obviously specific to this summer. And some of our main goals for the next few months are to make mountaintop removal a national issue. Coal companies are essentially turning Appalachia into a sacrifice zone, and for whatever reason, very few news outlets outside of the region have picked up the story, which obviously allows the coal companies to get away with a lot more. So one of the main goals is to just draw more national attention to the issue, along with, you know, the obvious goals of shutting down the mountaintop removal mining sites that are already in existence and preventing new ones from opening. We've had a lot of really successful local actions in West Virginia, Kentucky, and Virginia, in a lot of areas where the locals are extremely fed up with the coal companies there and the damage that's been caused to their streams and communities and mountains. So that's been really inspiring, just interacting with local folks in all these different areas and just kind of seeing, you know, everyone interact.
Who are the coal companies involved that you're protesting?
Well, probably the biggest one is Massey Energy, based here in Richmond. They're the target of our demonstration on the 8th, which is the International Day of Action Against Climate Change, and also the protest is also part of the G8 demonstrations in Scotland. Massey is active mainly in West Virginia, but also in Kentucky and other states. And they are, I believe, the fourth largest coal company in the country. And they're kind of setting the industry standard as far as mountaintop removal goes. Yeah, so obviously whatever they do has a huge effect on the other coal companies and how they mine coal in the area.
How has Massey responded so far?
Massey has basically ignored the community in which they operate. I think a good example is in Marsh Fork near Sundial, West Virginia. There have been repeated petitions, hearings, protests, where the community is overwhelmingly opposed to Massey's operations there. They have a coal silo, a coal preparation plant, a giant sludge dam, and an active mountaintop removal mine, all directly adjacent to an elementary school. And a number of students and teachers have come down with cancer, and that whole area has to deal with speeding, overweight coal trucks, constant blasting, pollution of their watersheds that they depend on for water and agriculture. And it's just been really amazing the amount of community opposition to those mining operations, and Massey just hasn't done anything in response to that.
What specifically at the G8 summit are you protesting?
Well, one of the big issues at the G8 this year is climate change. You know, in the papers today, they mentioned that, you know, Blair is trying to make that more of an issue that the G8 deals with, and Bush obviously is dragging his feet on it. So I think that's a really clear tie-in with the coal industry and what's going on in Appalachia. Obviously, we're in the midst of a crisis in the global climate, and it's really urgent that the G8 and our government here and all governments and all people be working as much as they can to transition into cleaner energies and just in general a more sustainable lifestyle. And mountaintop removal is the coal industry's answer to that. It's, you know, just basically speeding up the process of coal extraction and burning, and it's continuing on with these fossil fuel energy sources that we know are destroying the life support systems of the planet, yet because it's cheap electricity, there's still that economic demand for it. So I think a central message of our demonstration here is that the survival of communities in Appalachia and the survival of the ecosystems that we depend on for survival is actually more important than Massey's bottom line.
What do you have planned for tomorrow in Monroe Park?
We are going to have a rally that starts at noon in Monroe Park, and we're going to have a bunch of speakers from the coal fields coming in from a number of different states. We will have a man named Ed Wiley speaking, who just finished a vigil. He sat on the steps, the Capitol steps in West Virginia, to demand an answer from the governor as to why they haven't done anything about Massey's operations at the Marsh Fork Elementary School. And the governor actually did meet with him after about 5 hours. So he'll be coming and speaking about that. We also have some local groups from Virginia talking about local campaigns that they're working on. We have some music. And then probably around 1 o'clock, we're going to march from Monroe Park to Massey's headquarters.
And this protest isn't just in Richmond, is that correct? Are there other simultaneous protests happening?
That's right. It's a international day of action, so there's protests happening all over the world, all connected to climate change and to the G8. And Mountain Justice Summer has actually been in communication with some indigenous organizations in Venezuela that are organizing against large coal development projects there. So they'll be having actions in Venezuela tomorrow as well.
Abigail, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
Mountain Justice Summer will continue their efforts in West Virginia and Tennessee throughout the summer. More information can be obtained through their website at www.mountainjusticesummer.org. On July 2nd, Richmonder Thomas Cannon passed away, succumbing to colon cancer at the age of 79. WRIR's Liz Skrobashevsky is the host of the 20-Minute Pause and conducted one of Cannon's last interviews. Today, she talks about Thomas Cannon's legacy as the postal philanthropist for WRIR News.
On Saturday, July 2nd, Richmond lost a great man. Thomas Cannon, the postal philanthropist, died at 79 years old due to complications from untreated colon cancer. Thomas Cannon donated over $156,000 to people in need over 27 years. He rarely made over $20,000 in annual income on his postman's salary. He lived extremely frugally, working overtime to earn the money he lovingly gave to his recipients. The people he gave his gifts to came mostly from features written in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Mr. Cannon's gifts of $1,000 checks were usually delivered by the Times-Dispatch reporter and came with a letter of hope and inspiration. He asked nothing in return. In his long years of dedication, he was interviewed by Ted Koppel, Oprah Winfrey, and Mike Douglas. His journey of giving had its ups and downs, and Mr. Cannon, a deeply spiritual man, but not a religious man, sought through prayer the spiritual guidance he needed to continue his philanthropy. I was fortunate enough to have interviewed Mr. Cannon and Sandra Waggaman, author of the biography about Thomas Cannon, on June 24th.
Not over the money. I didn't miss the money I had given away over the previous two years, but what was bothering me was man's inhumanity to man. You know, I read the newspapers and listen to the radio and all the negative news, you know, the racism, corruption in high office, crime, wars overseas, people killing and hating each other. So I began to wonder whether people were worthy of my concern, if they were worthy of my sharing what little I had. And as I sat on that couch that day, in that frame of mind, a message came into my consciousness. Now, there was no voice. I didn't hear any voice. There was no apparition, no thunder and lightning from above, but just a message, unmistakable message, instructing me to go upstairs to look in my little box of scrolls and pick one out. And I got the impression that what was written on that scroll would have some bearing on my state of doubt. So I had this little box of scrolls. It's a little cardboard box in the shape of the Christian cross, and it's filled with little scrolls sitting up on end with little paper wrappers around them, and each scroll contains a verse from the Holy Bible. So that's what the was instructing me to do, go up and look in this box of scrolls. I hadn't looked in it for a long time. I had to blow the dust off it. And I took the little, when I opened it up, I took the little metal pick and fished one out, took the little wrapper off it and unraveled it. And when I read it, I was absolutely astounded. It was from the book of John, 15th chapter, the 16th verse. Ye did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you, that ye should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide. So that was the first inkling I had that I wasn't doing this all on my own.
Mr. Cannon's funeral was yesterday in Churchill. Notes of condolences were written and read. The Richmond Free Press, Governor Mark Warner, and Dolores McQuinn of the City Council all expressed their sadness to the families and those in attendance. Thomas Cannon wrote and taped his own eulogy. What was recorded was hilarious, spiritual, emotional, and filled with song and poetry. When reflecting upon his life during the eulogy, he said, "I did the best I could and as much as I could with as little as I had to the people who needed it the most." More information about the great life he led is available in Sandra Waggaman's autobiography, The Postal Philanthropist, The Thomas Cannon Story, published by Polari Publishing. To listen to my interview with Thomas Cannon, email me at lizs@wrir.org. Thank you.
That's it for this edition of Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm Lauren Ball. I'd like to thank all the volunteers who worked on this week's program: Matt Beckwith, Dustin Richardson, Liz Skrobashevsky, and Victoria Ward. If you would like to comment on anything you've heard today, please send an email to news@wrir.org. Archives of WRIR News can be found on our website at www.wrir.org. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.